chanjo kado dani gyoso chiran dadi madinje sanje ayo sanje chodan soye chonan dani chanjo bando dani gyoso chiran dadi
tatinima koran tsawa ti koran niba tajewe luk shaba las ngar ta ti tangbo ni shendani tajew tsam tsam shalji shebe kwanen tengo tanya ten debi maba tajewe tsini niba ni lobin sanje chan dawa tawa shiwa tabo sumba ni sanje chan chola tajewe shesewe chintze yate tajew tsam chigo yi jiga dhuja tobe jeba jawa tobe na te tajewe shere se
He's on page 24. So the explanation of the consequence school has seven outlines as before. Number one, the definition of a consequentialist or prasangika is a proponent of the middle way who, by way of accepting just other approved consequences, does not assert true existence even conventionally. Divisions, examples of consequentialists are Buddha Palita, Chandrakirti and Shantideva. And number three, the etymology. There's a reason why Acharya Buddha Palita is called a consequentialist. He is called such due to asserting that an inferential cognizer realizing a thesis is generated in the continuum of an opponent just by stating consequences. If we look at the etymology of the word consequentialist or prasangika, a consequentialist is someone who's able to cause an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer realizing a particular thesis, no? Just by merely stating a consequence, no? A consequence of whatever argument or statement that he makes, So the consequentialists state that, you know, In order for an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer, realizing something, a thesis, you know, yeah, so you put forth a thesis, isn't it? It is not necessary to cause him to realize that thesis by stating a reason, oh, this is so and so. All you have to do sometimes is just to state, you know, a mere consequence of his position, his or her position. You know. It's just stating, oh, it follows that, you know. So just to state an example of a consequence, something that a consequentialist would throw at the like proponents of the autonomy school. Yeah, you know, let's say throw a consequence at them, you know, in order to refute true existence. Yeah. So the consequentialist will say something, for example, oh, the subject, a sprout. You know, it follows that the subject, a sprout, is not produced in dependence upon its own cause because it is inherently existent. So it is said that that the opponent, by listening, by hearing this, the consequence, you know, that's just thrown at them, they realize it is said that they can realize there's an internal contradiction in their own position, and in so doing, in the process, they may come to realize the emptiness of inherent existence. So the consequentialist state that in order for an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer realizing a particular thesis, it is not necessary to state a subject that is commonly commonly agreed upon by both parties, and it's not necessary always to also state a reason. Yeah. Yeah, so the point is that the consequentialist, the prasangikas, state that in order for an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer realizing a thesis, yeah, it is not necessary always to cause the opponent to do so by always stating a proof or reason. You can do that simply by stating a consequence, of course, in brackets, absurd consequence, you know, of their position, you know. That's in brackets, but, you know, by stating the consequence of their position, you know.
Not to have said, not to the idea of the Nema, you take it. Jana Kazashiwanan said that
lotup tang ayate okonam gi tik tik thagyur koya tang ya tenzi koya tang tinde ripe namsha mabu masuma chi roha ani umaba chi namsha chi sumu yuma chi roha tine ma ani chikta lomi sanje kya ani peche ani zawa sharaka kya zome dukana ani zozo pagi ta langshi meba dhubay tato maang che thagyur tong ta ani thagyur thagyur koya chi ta ani chik Lutum between the Sumbares in the Java Cabin Guard, Lutum Sanjay, Taiju Kushawata, Animal Chistoxin, Taiju Kusha Mancheta, Vincent Taiju Tony Tubi Machi, and it's a Shakumama to Santay Machi.
So, of course, I mean the root of the consequentialist, the root of the consequence schools, of course. Stems from Nagarjuna father and son, namely Nagarjuna and his spiritual son, Ayadevaya. So if you remember, Nagarjuna composed what we call Tsawa Sherab, a fundamental treatise on wisdom. Yeah. But Nagarjuna and Ayadeva, in stating the Madhyamika view, did not employ a lot of consequences. What they merely did was to establish, you know, the general procedure of the Manimikas. Yeah. Then later on, Acharya Buddhapalita came, and in his commentary on Nagarjuna's fundamental root to wisdom, he employed extensively the use of consequences in explaining Nagarjuna's position. So in his Buddhapalita's explanation on Nagarjuna's fundamental root wisdom, he employed consequences in explaining Nagarjuna's view and intent, and he did not. He did not use autonomous reasons.
What in the shop? That in it, that Tijala, that living the Denchiki, that Sanjay Kangi, that Pogi, that was shared to compare down to Tikimidus. Taji Janja Koran Jew, then the Masson, Masson, and the Tikimidus. But never ran Jew, then the Koshe, and it damned to Kukres. Ranjew, then the Makon and Tikimaris in Taya.
So Buddha Palita did his thing, yeah? He composed his commentary on Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom, in which he used employed the use of consequences in explaining Nagarjuna's thought, yeah? Then later Baba Viveka came and disagreed with Buddha Palita's explanations on or commentary on Nagarjuna's fundamental root wisdom. Yeah. He disagreed with the idea that, you know, that you can just use consequences in order to establish the view of selflessness. He explained that one must use autonomous reasons, yeah, using proof and reason, in order to be able to cause an opponent to generate the inferential cognizer realizing selflessness. And of course, then he did his own trip. No? He wrote his couple of commentaries, yeah. Explaining Nagarjuna's fundamental root wisdom, using autonomous reasons, using how many proofs and reasons. Yeah.
Ranjubishin the Surgeon said he, but 타주 담당도 제 기타고 말 가지고 된지 꼭 그랬으니 이제 공부를 좀 공부를 했으니 내든 집에 다스 막다 아니 지 대화 어떻게 좀 자, 자세 대화 근데 좀 자니 안 와 집에 신데 소치 잘 되네 사람.
Well, this is how Baba Viveka became the trailblazer of the Swatantrika Madhyamikas. Yeah. He became the trailblazer of the autonomy school, yeah, Middle Way Autonomy School, because he disagreed, you know, with Buddha Buddhist commentary. And he basically felt that you can't realize selflessness and you can't realize Nagarjuna's thought just by depending on mere consequences. You know, employing consequences. He felt that, you know, autonomous reasons, you know, and proof, using of proof and reasoning, using of proofs and reason. It's not saying that consequences is not a reason, yeah. It's not a line of reasoning. I mean, you cannot think about it in English, okay? But anyway, Baba Viveka felt that, you know, you must employ the use of autonomous reasons and proofs, you know, in order to cause an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer realizing a particular thesis.
What in the shop? That cinema, Anishi, Tijala, Tata, Anishi, Ta, Anishi, Tasora, Tata, Tata, Anishi, Panda, Tata, Anishi, Tata, Sherush, Anishi, Java, Sixa, Zichi, that Tikabaya, Kasora. Sanje Jangi, Zashe Kumbatawa Nashi, Tabaris, Tatana, Dartabe, and Sanje Jangi, and Ludug Zawashe Kumbat, Buddha Bali the Zedi, and Lubin Kumbares, Tarang Tajism to Shetan, Jigre, the Lubin Kumbares, and Dartabe Sebus in the Sumashi. But Ranju Tinsi Kune, and Shetu Zawa Jigres, and Lakenshi Labat Jigmaris, Tatana, Dartabe, and Jig Tuxinianchi. 타주제 란주 밑에 봤어. 란주 등습권은 지금 안 했어. 경 부채에서 나왔다며.
Then later the great master Chandragati came along and in one of his famous commentary called the clear words, Tisalya. In the commentary he supported Buddha Palita's position. And he said supported that Buddha Palita in that one can cause an opponent to generate an inferential cognizer realizing the thesis just by merely stating consequences. Yeah. So in the text called Clear Words, he agreed with Buddha Palita's mode of explaining Nagarjuna's fundamental root wisdom. And he also stated clearly that Buddha Palita's explanation was exactly according to the intent of Nagarjuna. He also stated that, you know, the use of autonomous reasons in order to generate an inferential cognizer realizing a thesis in an opponent is wrong. So, yeah, so Great Master Chandragati, you know, stated very clearly that the Prasangika position is the valid one, correct one, whereas the assertions of the autonomies are incorrect, stated very clearly. And for that reason, most people would attribute Chandragati to be the trailblazer of the Prasangika Madhyamika. Well, of course, there are a couple of some scholars, or some masters, who say that Buddha Palita is the trailblazer of the Prasangikas instead of Chandragati.
What 늘 샤타 시바 하테샤 보테다 아 다 유기 다 유기도 수수 탈라네 고주 담고주 니 스타 유기 남샤 신도 가나 다 유르라 고주 원주스 어떤 니치노에 다
Okay, so next, the way of asserting objects. Yeah. So this is the prasangika way of asserting objects. Yeah. So in the root text, you can see, it states that there are two types of objects. Yeah. Hidden objects and manifest objects. Manifest or obvious.
What option? But till I said, well, I need to talk about it.
Objects that are necessarily realized in dependence on a reason are posited as hidden objects. And objects that can be ascertained by an ordinary person, ordinary literally means ordinary, you know, I mean, not necessarily ordinary in the spiritual sense. Tsudong, I mean, a person who looks only this side, I mean, like this life alone. ordinary as in the English word ordinary, okay? So objects that can be ascertained by an ordinary person through the force of experience without depending on the reason are posited as manifest objects. Yeah. So the examples they give of manifest objects in the text are, of course, there's nothing else but a pot. There's always a pot and a vase, you know? And a woolen cloth. Yeah. manifest object and perceptible object are mutually inclusive. Yeah. Pot.
Perceptible.
The
object.
어떠시네. 제가 따조티에 변화 분바스도 가라. 먼저 분바티 즉시 변화 분지미시 분바통에도 가 이제 고고 말아. 응. 왔다. 통점 니네 고 분바 남자 또 토해. 고 이제 고제 분바를 신. 분바 또 받은 냐버지 이제 고고 말아. 봐. 왔다. 먼저 통대기다. 변화 속라. 다 가래네. 분바가 처음에 땅에서 깝다. 가래네 태다. 다들 고 태버지 이제 고고 말아.
I mean, whether it's a pot or a table or a cup, or I mean, these things are obvious, right? I mean, you know, we see a cup, you know, you don't have to sit and think using reason, and then you try to figure out whether it's a cup. I mean, it's a cup, right? I mean, it's obvious, right? I mean, it's like, you know, that's the thing. You realize it, you know, to experience it. You don't have to go and, you know,
yeah. 다 치로 작사서 때도 요구도 왔다. 아마 지금 진짜 녀바의 진짜 고고야 말해. 내가 공식 유득이에 미식 유득이에 소. 아니 나식 유득이에 다. 아니 나의 유득이에 티. 아니 르레 르기 유득이에 작사 진짜. 그 진짜 꺼내 심고야 말해. 그거. 그 제가 때가 문제로서 진짜 티.
Basically, you know, all the objects of the five senses, yeah. Like, you know, visual forms, Visual forms are objects of the eye consciousness. Sounds are the objects of the ear consciousness. Smells are the objects of nose consciousness. Taste is the object of the tongue consciousness. And then tactility or touch. Tactility is the object of the body consciousness, is it? These objects are obvious, isn't it? You don't have to, you know, depend on the reason to realize them. Yeah? You know, you experience them, isn't it? So obvious or manifest objects or perceptible objects are such objects whereby, you know, in order to realize them, you don't necessarily have to depend on the reason. Of course, I mean, there are exceptions, there are cases whereby, you know, I mean, you know, you can always find examples or exceptions where you need to have, you know, need to think what is this and what is that. But in general, these things need not be realized by using a reason, isn't it? Yeah, isn't it? And this, yeah. So these are obvious or manifest objects, yeah. Unlike hidden objects, yeah. You know, hidden objects are objects that you have to, at least initially, you know, realize, you know, by using a reason.
Yeah.
Then, so examples of hidden objects given in the text are, for example, the impermanence of sound and the emptiness of sound being truly existent. So in order to realize the impermanence of sound or to realize the emptiness of sound, one has no choice but to depend on the reason. Without depending on the reason, there's no way to realize it. So according to the consequent schools, anything that exists is either a hidden object or a manifest object. There isn't a common locus between the two. That means you will not be able to find something that is both a hidden object and a manifest object. And therefore, this makes the two of them, these two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Hidden objects, within the category of hidden objects, there are hidden objects and there are extremely hidden objects, or extremely obscure objects, extremely hidden. Yeah. Okay. So extremely hidden objects are things like the extreme, the very subtle details of the workings of a particular cause and effect relationship, a particular cause of revelation. Oh, what was the cause? What was this? And what, you know, those are and also the Pure Lands. Existence of Pure Lands.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the existence of Buddhist Pure Lands, you know, and then the Buddhist Pure Lands are all huge and extensive. They are in this direction or what direction or what else? All the numbers of them and so forth. You know. So these are what we call extremely hidden objects. So they are hidden objects and they are extremely hidden objects. Extremely hidden objects can only be realized by independence on scripture authority. By the independence of scripture authority, one generates the inferential cognizer through belief. Yeah, this is how one comes to understand extremely hidden objects. Yeah. So in the according to the Prasangikas, the manifest objects and the hidden objects are usually exclusive, yeah. But in the lower schools, the way they define manifest object, for example, according to the Sutra school, manifest object is that which is explicitly realized by a direct. So yeah, the manifest object is that which is directly explicitly realized by a direct valid cognizer. That which is explicitly realized by a direct valid cognizer is a manifest object. That which is that which is explicitly realized by an inferential cognizer is a hidden object. Yeah.
어떻게
So because of this understanding of what constitutes a hidden object according to the lower schools, yeah, that which is not explicitly realized by inferential cognizer, isn't it? So for them, everything can be explicitly realized by inferential cognizer. And if that's the case, then that makes everything a hidden object as well. Yeah? So you remember? Existent, non-existent, the phenomenon mutually exclusive? I think it's somewhere there. Yeah. Forget it, yeah. So anyway, according to the Prasangika's consequence and consequentialist, yeah. Manifest object can be realized directly in experience, yeah, without necessarily having to depend on the reason, whereas a hidden object has to be realized in dependence on the reason.
Yeah.
So that's one way of looking at existence. Hidden objects and manifest objects. Yeah. Another way of dividing objects is into the two truths. Yeah. The obscurational or conventional truth and an ultimate truth. Yeah. So next is the definition of a conventional truth. So conventional truth or obscurational truth, in the context of the Pasangika, sometimes maybe obscurational truth is more accurate. Obscurational truth or truth or concealer or concealer truth. Many ways of translating the word Kunzo Denpa. So that gives some idea anyway. So if we stick with conventional truth for the time being, then the definition of a conventional truth is an object that is found by a valid cognizer. I prefer distinguishing than analyzing. It says analyzing, isn't it? So let's read it as an object that is found by a valid cognizer, distinguishing a conventionality, and with respect to which that valid cognizer distinguishing the conventionality becomes a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality. Well, you see in the definition, a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality, isn't it? Yeah? So there is one valid cognizer, distinguishing a conventionality. Then there is also a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate. For speaking from a simplistic point of view, for ease of understanding, a conventional truth is the final object or the main object of a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality. An ultimate truth is the final object or the main object of the valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate. And here we are talking about the higher school, consequence school, the Prasangikas Madhyamika. So according to them, there's a definition of ultimate truth, right? But you know, what exactly is an ultimate truth? At the end of the day, it is the emptiness of true existence. There's nothing higher or more exalted than that. So the ultimate truth is essentially the emptiness of true existence. Yeah. Anything else other than that, any other existence other than that, is a conventional truth.
Mm-hmm.
좀 잡았어요. 거기 시작했다. 또 뒤에다 봐.
Yeah, so this is a easy way of you know to understand the two truths yeah, according to the Prasangikas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you see the definition of the conventional truth is quite a mouthful, right? An object that is found by a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality and with respect to which that valid cognizer distinguishing the conventionality becomes a valid cognizer distinguishing conventionality. If we are just looking at, if we're just looking at conventional truth from the perspective of a sentient being, yeah, then the first part is enough, really. An object that is found by a valid cognizer analyzing a conventionality, that is fine, you know. But then, why do you have the rest of the definition, you know? Basically, it is to do with the basically there's Buddha, yeah. You know, the Buddha and us different, you know. Buddhas perceive, you know, the two truths simultaneously.
Yeah.
Buddha's omniscient mind, omniscient knower, knows, basically cognizes and directly perceives the two truths simultaneously, isn't it? Then that would make that one omniscient mind both a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality and at the same time a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate, yeah? But is there a phenomenon that is both these two valid cognizers? A vase is a conventional truth, isn't it? Right. A vase is a conventional truth. A vase is not an ultimate truth, though. No, right?
Then
somebody comes along and say, the vase is an ultimate truth, isn't it? It is an ultimate truth because it is the final object that is distinguished by a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate. Then you say no, right? Then what are you going to say? You're going to say yes or no? You have to say no, right? I mean, according to the, I mean.
돈돈 제주에 세 명이도 임바디 가르스나 돈돈도 무슨 또 별로이 도구로 왔어 나도다 나 그래서 돈돈 제주에 너희 세 명이도 임에 임바디에서 가르스나 돈돈도 무슨 또 별로이 시자로 왔어 나
무슨 시자
돈돈도 무슨 또 별로이 시자로 왔어
저절에
돈돈 제주에 너희 세 명이도 임바 다 왔어 나들 돈돈도 무슨 또 별로이 시자에 비쳤어 나
You say no, so the vast is the conventional truth, not an ultimate truth, right? You say yeah, then somebody comes along and says it's an ultimate truth. It is an ultimate truth because it is the final object. It is the object that is found by a valid cognizer distinguishing ultimate. Then, yeah, then you say no, it's a conventional truth, right? Then the person continues and say, it follows... It follows, it absolutely follows, of course, it follows that the vase is the final object of a valid cognizer distinguishing ultimate because it is the object of comprehension of, it is the object of comprehension of a valid cognizer distinguishing ultimate.
Getting somewhere, you're not getting anywhere. Imbata. Okay, we try one more. Okay. Tatunda, Tanya Jujig, Semi Nietens, Tundam Jujig, Tanya. 세면 예튼스 뒤집고다
No, you know why we go through this whole process. It's not for fun. The point here is if I were to ask you, somebody will ask you, why can't we just define conventional truth as an object that is found by a valid cognizer distinguishing a conventionality, full stop. And then similarly, why can't the definition of ultimate truth be an object that is found by a valid cognizer distinguishing the ultimate? Enough already, right? It is right. It is the final object that is distinguished by both valid cognizers respectively, right? So why can't we just leave it as that? And then we have to have one whole long behind, you know, it's like those things that you see in all those legal documents and financial products and what have you, you know. I mean, why talk so much? Like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so that's the point. Why?
Oh, that is do. That doesn't mean that you mean those. That to buy. That is the main idea. Inna, that to buy. Be careful, man. That, right? Man. That's why. That to. That 전담 주식.
아니 주식이.
아, 전담 주식 세면에도 있나? 돈이 미쳐고 말했어. 따뜻다. 저기 뒤집어서는 잡아가라. 이 잡으면 됐어. 잡고 말했어. 따뜻다.
So if the definition, of ultimate truth is an object that is found by a valid cognizer analyzing the ultimate. Then ultimate truth in this case will not necessarily be limited only to emptiness. If it is the object found by a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate, is it necessary emptiness? Huh? Take four. So if basically okay, the point is this, if the definition of an ultimate truth is just an object found by a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate, that's it, stopping there without the rest of the sentence. The problem, what would be the problem? The problem is that and you can posit anything, basically any existence, not necessarily just emptiness, to be the object that is found by a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate. It can be anything else other than emptiness. And then this will make... Anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
So, then, all phenomena are the objects that are found by a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate. Likewise, all phenomena also become the objects that are found by a valid cognizer distinguishing conventionality.
굉장히 급사받아서 가월했으나 최담지 등담주직의 세면유도 이마디 가렸으나 돈이 모순을 두면 남기인지 또 미쳤고요. 따뜻한 삼마당사 드려요. 최이나 동반이 모순을 두면 남기인지 또 미쳤고요. 최이 모순을 두면 남기인지 모순도 미쳤고요.
So the problem becomes clear when somebody tells you, oh, the subject, the Buddha's omniscient mind realizing emptiness. The subject is the Buddha's omniscient mind which realizes emptiness. The Buddha's omniscient mind realizes emptiness, right? That is a valid cognizer distinguishing an ultimate or not. Yes, right? You accept, right? But Buddha's omniscient mind realizes only emptiness? Buddha's omniscient mind realizes everything else, yeah? Every single thing, isn't it? Which means everything other than emptiness, right? Oh, then? So because of this, therefore it follows that all phenomena are objects that are found by a valid cognizer distinguishing ultimate. Because all objects are found by the Buddha's omniscient mind, all phenomena are the objects that are found by the Buddha's omniscient mind.
다가나시 다 최단제 단예주지 세면이도 레스 제 가르르스나 군조대 몽고순도 남겐기 모스도 비착고요 추어 간대지 있나 군조대 몽고순도 남겐기 또 비착고요 군조대 몽고순도 남겐기 단예주지 사마차야 다 단예주 세면이도 인바 가르스나 군조대 몽고순도 남겐기 모스도 비착고요
Likewise, all phenomena are also objects that are found by a valid cognizer distinguishing conventionality, because for the Buddha's omniscient mind directly perceiving all conventionalities, then for Buddha's mind directly perceiving all conventionalities, all phenomena become the object that is found by that mind. So, because when you bring Buddha into the picture, how does Buddha's mind work? And then if we were to just define the two truths, yeah, as the objects that are found by the respective valid cognizer, whether distinguishing an ultimate or distinguishing conventionally, just like that, then it's not going to work. Yeah.
Oh,
Therefore, the definition of a conventional truth is posited to be an object that is found by a valid cognizer, and distinguishing of conventionality. And not stopping there, and with respect to which that valid cognizer distinguishing conventionality becomes a valid cognizer distinguishing conventionality.
The
English words are difficult, no? Can you just ask me? I say, okay, lah, for me, I don't know. For me, okay, lah, I don't know. I say, I don't know about you guys. So unlike the Swatantrikas, the Prasangikas do not divide conventional truths into real conventional truths and unreal conventional truths. Yeah. Okay, according to Prasangikas. Because there are no real conventional truths. Why? Because if it is a conventional truth, it is necessarily not real. However, relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness, one does divide the conventional truths into real and unreal. Relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness. So basically, the essence is this: there are no real conventional truths. Yeah. If it is a conventional truth, it is necessarily unreal, which means it's a falsity. However, the Prasangikas divide the conventional truths into real and unreal, relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness. In the text it says, because a form relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness is real, while the reflection of a face in the mirror is not a real face. So it says relative to the perspective of worldly consciousness. Worldly here refers to somebody who hasn't realized emptiness. So for such a person, in the perspective of such a person, a form is real. Yeah, a form is real. So, in the perspective of a worldly person, someone who hasn't realized emptiness, of course, all things and appearance, or everything that appears to that person appears as existing by way of its own character, existing, truly existing. Inherently, yeah. So not only is there that appearance, the person ascends to the appearance, thinks that, oh, this is how things are, and basically agrees and assumes that this is how things exist, things are like that, you know. And therefore, in the perspective of such a person, everything is real in that sense, real as in they are what they are, they're what you see, you know. So form here is, in this case, is considered to be a real conventional truth, isn't it? According to the perspective of a worldly consciousness, yeah. But then the text continues. The text continues by saying that if it is real relative to the perspective of worldly consciousness, it does not necessarily exist, because truly existent forms, truly existent forms do not exist. So the reflection of a face in the mirror is an unreal conventional truth. In the perspective of a worldly consciousness, because even for someone who hasn't realized emptiness, can realize that the reflection of the face in the mirror is not the face. It's not the actual face. It's not rocket science, right? So even a person who hasn't realized emptiness can realize that the reflection of the face in the mirror is not the face. So the person realizes that there's a disparity between between appearance and reality. So there are those things that the worldly person, someone who has not realized emptiness, there are those things that the person cannot cannot realize that there is a disparity between how it appears and how it exists, and accepts that it exists in the way it appears. Yeah. So those phenomena are what we call real conventional truths. Yeah. In the perspective of a worldly consciousness. Whereas the reflection of a face in the mirror is an unreal conventional truth relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness. Why? Because even for a worldly person who has not realized emptiness, that person can realize that the reflection of the face in the mirror is not the actual face. The person sees that there is a disparity, there's a difference between appearance and reality. So such an example, like the reflection of the face in the mirror, is an example of an unreal conventional truth relative to the perspective of a worldly consciousness. So do real conventional truths exist? No. Do unreal conventional truths exist? So one may have, we can maybe be able to say yes, yeah. Like the reflection of a face in the mirror, yeah? It's a falsity, isn't it? It's unreal, isn't it? Then the definition and ultimate truth is there, yes it is. Then the consequentialists are like in asserting that true cessations are ultimate truths. Yeah.
That
Next is the way of asserting object possessors. Yeah. So here there's some differences. Yeah. In the consequentialist position. The mere I that is imputed in dependence on the five aggregates is asserted to be the illustration of the person. Person is necessarily a non-associated conversational factor. With the exception of the consequentialist, everybody else believes that things exist inherently, which means the object, basically everybody else except the consequentialist, believe that, when you look for the object, you definitely be able to find something you can point to, that you can say, oh, that's the thing. That's the meaning of the phrase, the imputed object when sought is findable, isn't it? So, the lower and most everybody else, therefore, with the exception of the consequentialist, everybody says that, some say that, oh, the I, the person, is the body. A lot of them say that it is the mind, isn't it? But here, the consequentialists obviously do not say that the person is either the body or mind, isn't it? In fact, they say that the body is not the mind. It's ridiculous, and the body cannot be the person cannot be the mind, the person cannot be the body as well. Because when you look for the person, ultimately, what you find is nothing. You'll not be able to find the person when you look for it. But yet, the person exists, right? So obviously, the person exists, but yet when you look for it, it cannot be found. So what on earth is the person? So at the end of the day, the person is none other than that which is merely imputed independence upon the five aggregates. This is how the I exists. That which the I exists is merely imputed independence on the five aggregates. That's it. Nothing beyond that, is it? And therefore, in this school, the person is a non-associated compositional factor. Yeah? It's not matter. It's not consciousness. Yeah? Remember the divisions of functioning thing into three? So there are two types of awarenesses, valid cognizers and non-valid cognizers. Then as for valid cognizers, there are two types, direct valid cognizers and inferential valid cognizers. So the prasangikas define a valid cognizer differently from the rest of the gang. You know. For the prasangikas, you know, as long as the mind realizes its object, you know, its own object, you know, object of that particular mind, whatever mind in question, you know, he has his own object, isn't it? As long as that mind realizes that object, is infallible with respect to that object, it is a valid cognizer. Unlike the lower, the schools below it, yeah, because they all insist that a valid cognizer has to be a newly incontrovertible knower. Sounds familiar, right? A newly incontrovertible knower, yeah. He has to be fresh. Fresh, I mean, like, you know, the very first moment of conviction, yeah, where the prasangika says, no, there's no need.
Ortoshine, that the name of 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 the
So there's a difference here between the prasangikas and the rest of the tenets in that for the prasangikas, a valid cognizer need not be just, you know, that first moment of realization of the object, you know. That it doesn't have to be a newly incontrovertible knower. Yeah. As long as it realizes its object, it is a valid cognizer for the prasangikas. And therefore, for that reason, according to the prasangikas, subsequent cognizers are considered to be valid cognizers as well. Whereas in the, you remember from the previous module, right? Subsequent cognizer is not a valid cognizer, Teo? Teo? Huh? A knower that realizes what has really been realized. The point you have to get is there are differences these differences in assertions between the prasangikas and the other tenets with regards to what constitutes a valid cognizer. Comes from where? Comes from their differences in the definition of a valid cognizer, isn't it? So there are two types of valid cognizer, direct valid cognizer and inferential valid cognizer. What is a direct valid cognizer according to the prasangikas? A direct valid cognizer is a valid cognizer that arises, you know, without necessarily having to depend on explicitly realizing a sign, and it is incontrovertible with respect to its object of the mode of comprehension, apprehension. Okay, so what is a direct valid cognizer according to the prasangikas? It is a valid cognizer, but a valid cognizer that does not arise in dependence or so it is a valid cognizer. A direct valid cognizer is a valid cognizer which does not arise in which does not arise by directly or explicitly depending on the sign, and it is an incontrovertible knower with respect to its object of the mode of apprehension. Then you have inferential Vedic cognizance, and then the prasangikas. By doing this kind of material, I may get another many days of MC. What am I saying? Okay, they assert directly, how's it? Direct Vedic cognizers, inferential Vedic cognizers, they do not, so you take out the self knowing direct perceivers, yeah. Okay? They do not assert that. Then, so you have yogic direct perceivers, yeah. So, instead of the usual four, we talk about three, yeah. Then, what does it say about the direct Vedic cognizers? How many types are there according to this text? Two, yeah. So this is where another difference comes in, yeah. Okay. So according to the Prasangikas, there are two types of direct Vedic cognizers. There are conceptual direct Vedic cognizers, and there are non-conceptual direct Vedic cognizers. Whereas, according to the lower schools, like the according to the Sutra school, like what we studied, we did before, a direct Vedic cognizer is necessarily free from conceptuality, isn't it? Necessarily free from conceptuality, isn't it? But here, according to the Prasangikas, there are conceptual direct Vedic cognizers.
That means that the Mutsin, that of Jabaki Nibas. That Tome Musumla, and it Munzi Musum with Tani gave it, and would continue with Tisha double.
So, examples of conceptual direct Vedic cognizers are the second moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent, and a remembering consciousness that is factually concordant memory of the blue generated through being induced by a sense direct perceiver apprehending blue. So the illustration given here of a conceptual direct Vedic cognizer is the second moment. Illustration of a conceptual direct Vedic cognizer given here is the second moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent. The second moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent is posited as a conceptual direct Vedic cognizer. What about the first moment? The first moment of an inferential cognizer, the first moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent is an inferential Vedic cognizer. The second moment becomes a subsequent cognizer. But it is a direct valid cognizer. And it is a conceptual direct valid cognizer.
Direct yang tu, explicit yang tu. Kap dia.
Explicit. Explicit siapa? Tadi cuma kosih. Tapi tu mesti.
Kap tu lah.
Kap tu. Tadi balas siapa?
Padu macam apa?
Mesti saja. Sini baru macam apa? Mesti saja. Sini baru macam apa saja? Kap tu je.
Terus direct ni. Terus direct dia.
So. Why is the first moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent and inferential valid cognizer, and then in the second moment it becomes a conceptual direct valid cognizer? So the difference between, as mentioned before, the difference between an direct valid cognizer and an inferential valid cognizer, according to the Prasangikas, hinges on whether the generation of their mind arises in dependence. Whether it is generated independence or by relying directly on a sign or not, or a sign or reason or not. Direct valid cognizer is not generated, you know, independent, it's not, you know, its generation is not, it does not come about independence on directly, you know, or, you know, relying directly on a sign, you know. Whereas an inferential cognizer is generated by relying directly, you know, on a sign, a reason. You remember, right? Independence upon a sign, remember? Independence upon a sign, from the definition in last module. So, the first moment of a mind realizing the impermanence of sound by relying on the reason, that makes that first moment an inferential valid cognizer, because that first moment comes about, you know, by relying directly on a sign, you know. So that makes it a valid cognizer. It is a valid cognizer, and not only that, it is an inferential valid cognizer. Yeah.
다양고 계진이바 수도가나 제가 참아 많이 봤지 무슨 참아래 쓰고 또 윤자 갈스나 계진이바디 또 윤자를 드니 깨바다래 돼 윤자를 드는 무엇이 깨바 말아.
So the first moment of the inferential cognizer realizing sound to be impermanent is an inferential cognizer because it is generated directly directly from a sign, isn't it? Right, directly depending on the sign, isn't it? Then, but how come in the second moment, that same mind is now considered to be a direct valid cognizer? That second moment is generated independence on the reason or not? Yes, but it's not generated directly, independence directly on the reason. You know? Not directly in the second moment, yeah.
내자 다 제가 말해 다 무슨 참아래 다 똑바래 다 무슨 참아래 소독신이 다 기회 독신 거야래.
So since in the second moment of the inferential cognizer realizing it sound to be impermanent is not generated directly in the independence on the reason, therefore it is not an inferential cognizer. Vedic cognizer. It is a direct Vedic cognizer. And is it conceptual? Yes, it is conceptual. So it is a conceptual direct Vedic cognizer. Then the second moment of an eye consciousness apprehending blue. That second moment of the eye consciousness apprehending blue is not generated directly in dependence on the sign or reason. And it, because it is the second moment of eye consciousness apprehending blue, it is a subsequent cognizer. And it is non-conceptual. It is a Vedic cognizer. So that makes it a non-conceptual, direct Vedic cognizer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to get is that according to the Prasangikas, a valid cognizer need not be newly incontrovertible. As long as it is incontrovertible with respect to its main object, its object, then it is a valid cognizer, yeah. Because of this, therefore, according to the consequentialists, the subsequent colonizers are also valid colonizers. Okay, and then what distinguishes a direct valid cognizer from an inferential valid cognizer? So direct valid cognizers, both are valid cognizers, but direct valid cognizers are not generated by directly depending on a sign, a reason. Whereas an inferential valid cognizer needs to be generated by relying directly on a sign. And for that reason, therefore, the second moment of an inferential cognizer is not posited to be an inferential valid cognizer, but it is a direct valid cognizer. And it is a conceptual direct valid cognizer. So basically, so according to the consequentialists, a direct perceiver is not necessarily a knower that is free of conceptuality. So in the next, if we have some time, we will look at the rest of the way of asserting object possessors according to the Prasangikas. Yeah. Then what's left is basically the explaining what the object of negation is, yeah, according to the Prasangikas, yeah. And then that's about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's understandable that after getting used to a certain way of presenting the mind, yeah, Then suddenly then you have this prasangikas and come and chodan, you know, like, have their own understanding. You know, of course. But it's important to know the differences, yeah. It's important to know clearly the differences, yeah. Yeah. So if you are, yeah, so even though you can now think about the differences, you know, between the prasangika's way of presenting the object possessors and what we have studied previously, yeah. And then if you see any, I mean, if there are any differences that you don't understand, you cannot reconcile, then you can bring it up in class, yeah.
That's about it.
So
MC for 10 minutes.
So finish up the usual prayers. So